Hi Asterix, I'm Selena.
And I'm Emma.
And today we are here with Pube Misogi, who is a writer, translator, and editor. Her debut book, Translating House One with the Coffee House Press 2020, is a hybrid investigation of the role of witness through the frame of the 2009 protests in Iran. Her second book, Sound Museum, forthcoming from the Coffee House Press in 2024, investigates the history of the global torture enterprise. Her translation of Nassim Marshi's I'll Be Strong For You was published in 2021 with Astra House, and she has two other translation books forthcoming in 2023 and 2024. An assistant professor of literary arts and studies at the University of Denver and a faculty mentor at Pacific Northwest College of Art, MFA, she is currently based in Denver, Colorado. Thank you so much, Pube, for being here with us. We're so excited to hear what you have to say.
Thanks for inviting me. It's exciting to be here with both of you.
Yeah, of course. And to begin, Selena and I have read and really enjoyed your book, Translating House One. There's this one excerpt that I really like, and it's when you wrote about the filmmaker and the kind of separate narratives that they were supposed to tell or they were supposed to make into a film. Woven together, the larger picture could be deemed too bleak, vile, untrue, could cause them to run into trouble with the officials. So the woman appearing in front of the camera remain unaware of the others or pretend to be, even though she, who made their words appear on the screen in the language of the other, has seen them all, knows them all, has watched the pieces come together to create this one mass, one story. So I think it's really interesting because it tackles a lot of different aspects of what it means to kind of create that sort of media. And I was wondering, like, how do you see the role of the reporter, the journalist, or the writer, the filmmaker? Is this the role of them? Is this the role of the citizens, the family? And what does this have to do with, like, the fragmenting or coming together of Translating House One? Because I'd see it as it's a collection of so many different things and an exploration. And as you go through, you're simultaneously searching and trying to figure out how you want to tell the story. So what do you really mean by the different angles and the different meanings that this story could take on depending on how it's told? And what is lost or what's found creating something for the other versus for telling just the telling the story in and of itself?
Yeah, I guess like I would differentiate between the role of the reporter and the writer. They're not necessarily the same. They can be, but they are not always the same. But in that excerpt that you read, I think what brings all of these different roles together, the journalist, the writer, the reporter, the citizens, the family, is this idea of we always have a limited perspective, no matter how expansive our point of view is. There is no way we can access all the different angles of a story. But I guess what is important in that is one of the central aspects of the book to keep asking questions, right? And to not to take everything as fact, but continue with the search. And with fragmentation, kind of ties back to the same idea of asking questions. It's like, I don't really, especially in that book, I'm not working with a consistent narrative. I'm not working with a more traditional linear narrative where we have access to all sides of the stories or even like to the protagonist's story. It's all fragmentation. And I think that's important when we are writing about moments of transition, when we are writing about trauma, when we are writing about documentation itself, the role of the archive. Fragmentation is at the center of all of this. So I wanted that to be part of the book as well. And then the last part of your question is what is lost in creating content for the other? So I kind of want to complicate that question by saying that we are not, even if we are creating content for others, we are always also creating content for ourselves. We are always our first audience. And what is lost is the gap that always exists between reality and representation of reality. No matter what we do, even if it's a photograph, we are always losing some aspects of reality.
Yeah, I think that also really has to do with how I view the quote. I see it as like, I think it's interesting that you emphasize that woven together the larger picture could be more untrue than the separate people in and of themselves. So do you mean that in a context of like covering a larger political message, that sometimes we lose the human side of things? And that's why in order to, like, in the process of creating something that the other, or into some creating a complete product, why does the she in this case, why does the main character have to hide part of it or pretend to be unaware? Does that make her less sensitive to each individual story so she can better portray a whole?
I don't think it's less sensitive. It's more of a question of safety and the framework of that specific project that that section of the book talks about, right? So it's kind of like if all the actors, actresses, the crew of the film, if they all knew each other, they could also as easily be a risk to each other. So it's a question of safety for that specific section, right? But it's also, to go back to the fragmentation and the whole, it's important when a story is told from different angles or different entry points. And that's why one coverage is never enough, especially if we are thinking. So that's what I have an issue with larger narratives, like grand narratives. I'm interested in small narratives that join together and create like a kilt of a story.
Yeah, that also kind of relates to when you said later on that like most like international festivals are looking for certain narratives of backwardness and victimhood, that they pay attention to the social politics instead of the aesthetics, and you really emphasize instead of and not alongside. So what was your process with kind of dealing with that aspect and relating and writing Transrelating House One? And Transrelating House One with its like prose that's like really graceful and oftentimes really poetic, and its focus is on like dreams and the subconscious, the focus is on like the individual people and love. I think there's this one aspect that was like talking about the maps, like people who speak your language, images that speak your city, black and white are dominant, but our lives are color, every day a new color. The cafe should stay open so we return. Some people you can't help but love. So what has been your process in trying to combine the social politics of activism with the aesthetics and trying to subvert that kind of point of view?
Mm-hmm. So the shortest answer would be the literary quality of the work. The form and the style was very important to me. It wasn't just, these are the things I want to say. It was more important to think about how I'm saying them, especially if you from my background or similar backgrounds, right? If you're writing within and from the so-called marginalized literature, it's more important to also be sensitive to how your work is going to be read. And also in general, I'm not interested in just reporting. I'm interested in complicating the reporting. And there are different places for a straightforward reporting to be done. But I think if I'm doing the work as a literary offering, then it's important for me to really work with the aesthetics of my language. And that includes like even the formal choices of, let's say, how my paragraphs are formed or how I'm thinking about the page, about the white space, about how I'm organizing the language on the page, but also even like on a sentence level.
I like that you drew that line between what you're doing as a literary author versus a reporter. And it made me think about, there are times in your book, you know, when you reference people who have died during these protests. You know, we have the mother and daughter who just were bystanders. Then there was the blogger who was arrested by the cyber police. And then there are times in your book where you just list out corpse number 78, or you just have the word corpse. How do you think that differs from what we see in the news, where it almost seems like they try to use death and violence against like bystanders or people as like a shock factor? And that is what we deem as reporting now. How do you think what you did differs from that?
That's a good question. I think what happens with only seeing the violence without any context has several consequences. One is we grow numb to seeing violence, which I think is something that has already happened for us. The other problem of it is we don't necessarily ask questions, and we don't necessarily or we are not invited to think about the context as a whole. There is always the story of the side who has committed the violence and the side of the victim. But that, what about like the larger complicated story? And one of the things in the book for me was not to just create like these like violent documentations of these killings, but actually put it in the context of all the life that exists, so that they're not just seen as victims, but we also see life and death coexisting together.
I just like the way that kind of goes back to the original quote when we talk about like weaving together that larger picture, the way everything has all these different sides. And it makes me think of when you wrote something for the Lighthouse Writer's Block, you wrote a piece called The Many Voices of the Displaced. Is it okay if we talk about that?
Yeah, sure.
You have this really great quote where you say, "In this dire global and domestic environment, the literary and arts scene do not seem to be doing enough to represent and bring forth the massive extent and complexity of this human catastrophe." And I like that in like relation to what we were just saying, like that if you grow used to violence, you grow numb to it, you're not seeing the life and the death coexisting, that complexity. What do you think the role of literature and art is in regards to these human crises or protests or human violence?
So part of me is very pessimist, and in a realistic sense, I think, well, there is literature and art created addressing all the human evil and violence, right? But history shows us that there is also a continuation of that, right? So it's not that by writing books or by creating art, we will stop whatever is happening that we don't want to stop. But it's more about like, how can we make sure that the resistance force exists in the face of the violence, right? So it might never stop it, but it's always making its life harder. And that's important. So I think if we consider the fact that our goal is to eliminate it, but we might never reach that like ideal utopia, sometimes that might cause us to be like hopeless and be like, okay, so what's the use of doing this work, right? But then what's the other option? The other option is just like to sit and let everything that we don't want to happen to us to happen. Well, I guess that's going to be even worse, right? So the only option we have is to continue doing what we believe in and to continue creating.
I love that idea of like art almost being like a thing in of rebellion against violence in and of itself, just its mere existence.
Mm-hmm.
And then in that same article,
can
you
I
kind of
something
almost
else, you know, before you move
yes,
on?
Yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. And I think especially as a younger writer or artist, and when you're starting off, it's very important to remember that it's not all about the product or about like publishing something or having something out there being seen by others. It's important to remember that the very process of creation itself, the process of thinking through language, thinking through your art materials, is actually the resistance, right? So through that process, we as individuals are changing. So even if someone is not out there to read us, we are still doing that work of resistance.
I love that idea because like obviously we're a literary magazine and we're all young writers trying to get published. Sometimes I think we get in this frenzy where we're just trying to find things to write about, finish, published, and it becomes almost mechanical. And it's almost like sometimes it feels like we're grabbing for subjects. So I guess it's kind of like when you said in that same article, what aggravates the issue even further is a lot of works delve into the subject, do so through problematic modes that may actually do more harm than help to spread the narratives of the displaced. So sometimes I think with art, we have such good intentions. And then those intentions don't always play out the way we want because we're almost so caught up in that idea of must get published, must get some credit to my name. What ways do you think art nowadays seems to almost not speak for the displaced anymore and has the opposite effect?
I mean, we see that a lot when it comes to, you're referring to that article, like to narratives of displacement or narratives of racism, right? Or any kind of groups who whose voices have been oppressed. We see that a lot happening. And it's not always happening from the outside. Part of it is also happening from our own desires to tell stories, right? But then it's like, sometimes the way you want to tell your story, there's not going to be an outlet for it, right? And then it's like, after a while, you begin to change your own critical thinking and your own modes of presentation in order to be published, for example, right? Or because you want to be published in a certain journal and you just like start reshaping your work, right? But especially when you're younger, it's very important to think outside of the box and to think about like, well, the key is to break a lot of the rules. So learn the rules, right? But at the same time, not think about reproducing a lot of the structures that already exist. And that needs a lot of like being sensitive, thinking, asking questions again, right? And you mentioned the word intention, right? Intentions are important. But as you said, like sometimes we have the best intentions, but the final work is still problematic, right? So the question is to, if we are thinking about process of writing, right, not to really be so sure of ourselves and step back from our work, think about like, okay, so if it's not me as the creator reading this work, but someone else, how would this work be read by them, right? So thinking about like other people's reactions, other people's thoughts, right? So trying to just like dissect and decode your own work from as many different angles as possible, right? So that it's like you have to think a lot about not just the surface level of your work, but also what's going on underneath, right? The unconscious of your work and the unconscious of yourself. So if you're aware of that, I think it's a different approach. So it's not just like, oh, my intention was good, but also looking at your work and thinking about like, okay, is that intention actually translating to the page or not?
I like that you brought up like kind of thinking, because I feel like writing, sometimes it gets so introspective. We don't really think about the way our work is going to be perceived or exactly think about why we're doing what we're doing. We're so focused on our own voice. And especially us, me and Emma, we're publishers, right? We read so much writing and we have that power to uplift other people's voices. And you've worked for so many lit mags. I'm probably biased. My favorite is obviously the Women, Life, Freedom column and Words Without Borders for reasons that should go unsaid. But in this column, you publish a lot of works that are translations of people from Iran who are living through these protests, living through violence, through fear, but also through beauty, and also from works that are from the diaspora or just people who around the world are supporting these protests. So I guess kind of my question for you is, what was the goal with collecting and translating these works, curating them and putting them all in one column? And who do you think your audience is and what do you want them to take away from reading it? Like, do you want the majority of your people to be reading this, people who are Iranian, people inside of Iran, people who are outside of the community, people who are protesting for the Mahsa Amini and the Zanzadegi Azadi movement. So kind of what were your intentions and what would you like us as an audience to take away from that?
I guess the main audience or the first primary audience would be those outside Iran, right? And the idea was, again, to think about instead of like the grand narrative, think about like the smaller fragmented narratives, right? A lot of these pieces were not commissioned. They were actually the pieces that people were already writing on a daily basis while everything was happening. So it was just their own personal experiences, or if they were written by people and sent to me for this column, it was also being written from more the personal lens, right? And I think that's something that we don't necessarily see in the work of, let's say, like reporting or like in media, right? The media, even if they get like personal stories, they use that as quotes or evidence for the larger story, right? But this is very much about what's happening on the ground, about like personal emotions, about personal decisions, about like everyday interactions. And that changes the way people receive the work. So usually with my work, my intention is not just to deliver information. It's more about to deliver an experience. And that experience is both intellectual, it's physical, corporeal, and also psychological, right? And the choices for the column were really like trying to do all of these things at the same time. But one other part of the audience is, or not necessarily the audience, but another group that was important for me was the people in Iran, because I wanted them to know that other people also care, right? Or even like those of us in diaspora, Iranians outside Iran care, right? we are hearing and listening to them, right? So even if they don't read the pieces or the pieces are not translated for them because they have access to the original language, right? The very fact that someone else wants to hear these stories and is going to be just a medium for delivering their voices, I think that is some form of support that is meaningful.
I think it's so refreshing to hear about a sociopolitical issue being personalized. You know, we hear so much in school, especially when we're doing informational argumentative writing, that we're trying to take as much of ourselves away from it as possible. You know, remove all bias, remove all experience. So it's just, it feels good to hear that someone wants to make that, almost bring back the human to it, right? And I think that was one of the most beautiful parts of the art that came from the protests is how personal all of them were. We had people, and how human, we had people, you know, dancing in the streets. We had women in solidarity cutting their own hair, people placing their hijabs in like the trees and on stakes, like almost in this act of like human defiance, people singing all together. It's like this beautiful human aspect to it. And I think for so many young artists, they almost, outside of Iran, outside of, there's so much conflict in the world right now. And obviously, I think we're part of a generation where especially our generation can't be, ignore all of this. So there's so many young artists who want to say something and want to do something, but they struggle to find their place in almost that setting with so much going on. Do you have any advice that you'd want to give these young artists and writers who listen to this and want to create work centered around activism and protest, and maybe some advice for them on how to find their space in that community?
Well, I want to start by saying that actually in the past year, I personally, and I know many people in my generation, have learned so much from the younger generation. So I don't think the relationship should only be we giving advice to you. It needs to be more of a conversation, right? But to think about like platforms and what kind of work can be done, I think it's very important to remember that this kind of work doesn't need to immediately explode and have like hundreds of followers or hundreds of like listeners. It's even if you just have like 5 people in your community who care about the work you're doing, that might be enough. So, and again, a reminder that we are not just doing this work to be received by others. The work that we are doing also changes us. And then that change, when we are even living our lives outside of our artwork, is going to just impact the person we are, right? So then you would go out into the world because of your work as a different person, right? So it's like the process is as important, right? So if you care about these issues going on in the world, it's not just like, okay, I'm just gonna do the activism and put it out there and create this one piece or just do this one performance or write this one thing and then just go do my own thing. That doesn't really work, right? It all needs to be interconnected.
Yeah, I definitely agree and resonate with that a lot. And I think that's really powerful to think about how art and the way we think about art and the way we think about creating art shapes who we become as a person that grows up and is becoming more and more integrated into like the world as a whole and into a world outside of them. And it also kind of makes me think of like how you talk about the subconscious a lot and translating House One, because it's kind of like we focus so much on what's out there. We focus so much on everything having a purpose, on every piece of our writing, like making some sort of ripple in the like larger world. I wonder like what the subconscious has to do with that. And the words House One, like you have like the like cloud things of the words, and kind of like House One emerges out of that. And I think in another interview, you said that you think of House One as in like a home, or as in like the first house, the house to return to. So is that kind of, does that have to do with the way like the subconscious is the part of you that is like the true manifestations of exactly how you feel and your values that you need to tap into and connect with more as you grow as a person, as you make art, and as you try to do things beyond yourself?
I think that's a good way to put it, right? The house one is not just a physical house, it's also our own, like the deep psyche that we carry inside ourselves, right? So the subconscious and the unconscious. And to return to it, yes, we are all like, I'm very much interested in constantly returning to it or trying to access it, but also leaving it and then see how that translates into consciousness and into action. Yeah. What was the other part of your question?
Well, this actually wasn't a scripted question. I just thought of it. Okay. But yeah.
Oh, I wanted to add something else. I guess this goes back to what Selena said and what you just said. This idea of like a house or a home, or even like thinking about the personal aspect of activism. One thing that in the past year I talked a lot with my undergrad students was if we are having conversations about, let's say, the Woman Life Freedom Movement in Iran, it's not just for them to learn about the other side of the world, but to actually learn how the problems that the Iranian girls and women and the larger population are protesting for and against are actually the very problems we are also protesting and having problems with here and in many other places in the world, right? So part of it is our rights to our bodies, right? The autonomy that we have as individuals, the freedom that we are asking for. And we see how that is also happening here in the US or elsewhere in the world. So one thing to think about is, what if we also have the same fierceness and don't wait for that moment of catastrophe in order to actually do something, right? If we are thinking about the powers that we have, especially as the young generation, right? And not just accept things, but actually think about what can we do collectively, the power that we have collectively, both in our creative work and also as individuals and as groups in our daily lives. That's very important, right? So it's not just like, let's learn about this other thing happening on the other side of the world, but also let's see what kinds of conversations we can have with one another, right? So remember the power of people. It's not about, oh, these questions are specific to that region or specific to a country. It's similar questions. It's also like environmental questions. It's the question of climate change. It's like lack of resources, right? It's hope for a better future. And how many of those are similar for all young people around the world, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think we're always so much more connected than we think we are. And that's why art kind of works, because it's just one person channeling their stories and their emotions and their way of being in the world, even if it is a collection of other people's stories. But the way that when we put our heart into something and someone else reads it, they can feel just as strongly, really shows that the things we actually feel and the things we fight for are extremely universal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think it's really beautiful that art can do that, because then I guess, what is the difference between art and reporting in that sense? Like in the stories we tell, how should we tell stories differently from an artistic perspective than from a reporting perspective? What about like creativity and about like our own stories and the personal values that we can put and we can shape in art and fiction and like creating something where we collect so many different roles? What about it makes it special, and how should we take advantage of it?
If I want to say in a very short answer, I think the difference between the artistic endeavor and reporting work is, if you're doing reporting, you are trying to clarify a situation for your readers. You want to simplify the situation, right? But if you are doing artistic work, it's actually more important to complicate things, right? So it's not an easy answer. It's for you to enter that artwork and be able to experience all the different parts of what is going on, right? And again, like to experience it or to access it from different parts of yourself as a person, right? So it's not just like informational level, but it's also like psychological level, emotional level, corporeal level, right? So even in that sense, it's more complicated.
Yeah. And that also makes me think of the thoughts that you have like dispersed throughout Translating House One. how like you're following her story, but you also have like these constant like page or 2 pages of thoughts about like how you should be telling the story, about like what all of these things mean and what it means for you as someone who's compiling and for someone that's communicating it. So how do you feel about the exploration of those thoughts as an artist while writing a piece? Is it our purpose to keep on reevaluating the means in which the ways we are telling our stories, the ways we are framing the art that we're creating? And should that be simultaneous to the stories we tell? Should that be a part of the stories we tell? And like, how do you feel about those questions now, like years after you've written the book? Do you feel like you know the answers to them, or do you feel like the asking and the searching is forever part of the creating and something that makes it better and more insightful and more complicated?
No, I don't have the answers, and that has never been the intention because the answers keep changing, right? But the questions are still like one of the favorite aspects of the book for me. And I think one of the reasons is because they just keep reapplying themselves to so many different situations. So sometimes in readings, I only read the questions depending on like what the setting of the reading is. So for example, like in the summer, during the summer where the Black Lives Matter protests were happening, I was doing an online reading, for example, and I could hear like the sound of protests from the corner in my Brooklyn apartment. And I decided just to read the questions and not anything else from the book. And it felt as if those questions were just written for that moment in time. So it's not about finding the answers once and for all. It's just revisiting those questions ever, like forever, and then be able to just like rethink them, right? Find new answers to them, or think about like how our answers have changed, or if they have not changed, how much more complicated they are, or if we have new aspects of that answer that we are now thinking about. So the questions are important and the answers are important too, but not as a final factual answer, but rather as an answer that keeps revisiting itself. And one thing you mentioned, Emma, you said, like, should we do this or that? I don't think there should be any shoulds. Especially if you're younger, you haven't yet figured out what your personal style is or what your hopes for your artistic life is. You need to just keep exploring and playing and just like trying different things and not be like, oh, this is my style and now I have found the answer. That actually is gonna be more detrimental than helpful. But adding to that, I wanted to say for me personally, just like working with open-ended text is very interesting in the sense of like similar to the questions, right? I want the book or the work that I'm doing to just like keep opening itself up rather than just closing itself and be like, okay, I read this once and I know what this is. I'm not really interested in that. I'm more interested in how can I write so that my reader wants to come back to that text, or even I want to go back to that text, and just like that text just opens new layers for me every time I read it. And every text does this, but I think it's different if you're intentionally working towards like open-endedness.
Yeah, and I think Translating House One definitely does do that. And when you were talking, I kind of realized it was so interesting that you could take the questions, which is like one part of the book, and kind of apply them to so many different aspects, just like how you were talking before about how the problems that we face here are the problems that we also face there, or the problems we face within ourselves. And I think it's interesting how like this book is kind of this giant puzzle of like, yes, it's the protest that you're talking about, but it's also a way to look at the protests, a way to tell stories around the protests, the questions that we keep asking ourselves and the audience and the readers. And you can kind of almost arrange them in so many different ways and come up with a different answer. Like our theme right now for our issue is lacuna, which is a gap or a missing piece that can't be translated. And Selena and I were talking about this earlier. We were talking about like blackout poetry and poetry where you can rearrange stuff and rearrange words and get like a different meaning. And maybe the crossing out of words or the spaces in between says things in and of themselves. So I kind of view Translating House One in a similar sense, where it's like even if you remove some part of it, you take one part of it, it's the words and the way the relationships they have to each other, the questions that they ask, and the ways they stand have so many different meanings and have so many different interpretations. And that's also another thing I really appreciate about the questions, how depending on what you ask, like if you say, if you read one part of the text and then you ask the question, it means something else. If you have the question by itself, it means something else. If you have a question in this political sense, it means something else. If you're asking it to a writer as they're writing a book, it means something else. So I just find that really fascinating how there's so many aspects and so many different collisions of the philosophical, like ethics kind of side of things, and also the more concrete, like actual activism and portrayal and like media and news. So I just thought, I don't know, it was so interesting to see how like it's a whole jigsaw, but it keeps reinventing itself depending on who we are and how we're reading it.
That's true. Yeah. And one other aspect of it is like to, or like one other draw of that kind of work for me is to move away from the hierarchical position of like, I, as the author, I'm going to tell you what the story is or how to think about my story. Instead, it's like you need to actually figure out what the story is for you. Yeah, so that also it goes back to that open-endedness. I have actually a friend, a visual artist, who told me that's like this should not actually be a book. So she actually ripped the cover up and started rearranging all the pieces. So in that sense, the order doesn't matter, right? And even like when I first finished the book, the order and the arrangement was completely different from what it is now. So I can see so many different ways of like arranging this book, right? So again, like in that sense, it's like you should discover what works for you best and how you make the connections in your mind and tell the story for yourself.
I actually did what your friend did with the book. After I read the entire thing, I didn't rip it up, but I did kind of segment it out where I would read all the dreamscapes and then I'd read all the corpses and then I would read the actual story and then I read your reflections. And as I did that, I would write like notes to myself. Like after reading like that certain dreamscape, was there anything I thought of or did it relate to a dream I had like earlier? And then when I would go back and then I read the entire book together again. It was interesting to go back and see like how reading those things separate kind of changed your perception of the book or just that page as a whole, which I think goes back to again our theme lacuna. You know, we were talking about last week the gaps that we see and translation, and then how we also see these gaps between generations or just different perspectives within a household. And it's kind of like when you take something away, the new light that you see, which I think is what this book and a lot of the poetry you translate kind of demonstrates, like, yes, we don't have that original translation of experience or language, but we are getting a new perspective and new form of language just from getting a new viewer perspective on it.
I just love you describing that process, Selena. The very first arrangement for the book, all those sections were separate, actually. But I had thoughts about like if I keep them separate, what are the impacts of that choice versus if I mingle everything up, how would that affect the reader's experience? So in the end, I went with like the interwoven. But that's how, in my mind, I was like going back and forth between these sections, right? So it wasn't like I wrote one section and then I was done and wrote another section. I was working on them simultaneously, but I was arranging them in my final folder as like, this is a section about corpses. This is a section about dreams. This is a section about the city. But because there is so much conversation about between those layers, right? It's also inherently interwoven, right? But as you said, it changes what you feel and how you receive the content based on what choices you make.
Yeah, definitely. And like thinking about it, if it was, I don't know, if you just had each section by itself, I would kind of read it as like, oh, this is the section, we're done, moving on to the next section. But the way that everything is so intermingled and it creates this like entropy and this chaos, it really makes you have to reevaluate what it means to put together a story for yourself. And it makes you realize that things really aren't linear. Like no story is linear. Like we get like media, we get news in like little bursts. We hear stories in little bursts. Part of like creating a story is maybe coming up with the ways we order them, the ways we make sense of the whole from the parts. And it's cool how you don't do that for us, but you force us to do that by ourselves, because we see, wow, we have so many parts that they're vaguely connected. There's this theme that might have to do with this theme, but it's our job to make sense of it and what it means to us. It's our job to like write that story for ourselves. And it was interesting because I think part of like the original plan, I was going to kind of ask about like your journey kind of figuring out what it means to tell a story, figuring out through the questions, through the fragments, what the role of a story was, what it means to combine these parts. But now I realize like there probably isn't an answer. And it probably is just part of the searching and part of the like the ways that we have to rearrange things. We choose to be like, as we go on, we see different angles all the time. And we have to like think of different ways to arrange them and different ways to tell stories to ourselves and to others. And I also think of the last page a lot, the second to last page, when we kind of have the girl, it's like at the end, after all the like dreams, the houses, they've kind of like exploded and whatever, and we've gotten to the house one. And I think you ask, what will happen to her when she turns the page and faces what she has known all along, has been living all along, but has struggled to keep a distance? What will happen when she becomes the reader of the pages she's been a part of all along? What will become of her, of me, of us, of them, of you? And it's so interesting because it combines everything. It combines her, it combines you, it combines the reader, it combines the person trying, it combines all these people trying to make their own stories. Like you're trying to make the story of like, of all these pieces, the dreamscapes of her, of the questions. We're trying to make the stories as readers. Like, what does this book mean? And she's trying to figure out her, like the bodies. She's trying to figure out the maps, the cities. So where does that leave us? What does that make of all of us? And what does it mean to be on both sides of things, as the discoverer and the creator, maybe at the very same time, because maybe those things are the same thing. So at the end, what does that make of us? Any thoughts?
I'm just going to say three or two words. One is a detective, but not in the traditional sense of a detective who's looking for answers, but more a detective who's looking for answers, but also already knows that there is no answer. And then the other word is, the story for me is always a labyrinth. I don't really want to get out of the labyrinth. I just want to spend more time in the labyrinth.
It is a labyrinth. You have to go back to it. You have to make sense of it in so many different ways.
Thank you so much for talking to us today. Really, we're so appreciated that you came on Ad Astra and were able to speak to our audience. I feel like a lot of the discussions today were about like the author's conversation with the audience or the viewer viewing the artwork. So if you could say anything to our audience, which you know is a collective of A, the magazine's reader, the Asterix, but also so many young authors and artists around the globe, is there anything you'd want to say to them, whether that regard like the gaps in translation or your book or advocacy? Anything you could say to them, what would it be?
First, I want to say thank you for inviting me to your podcast. It's lovely to see you both and talk to you in this new format. And then I guess what I would emphasize again is just to explore, to try and not be worried about whether this is the right way to do things, whether this is the wrong way to write a story. It's like, maybe the way you write a story is different from the way your friend writes a story, or the way your craft book tells you to tell a story. But maybe you're the first person who's gonna actually make that a way to tell the story. So just explore, experiment, and just like read and educate yourself, but also believe in creativity and just, again, like discovery.
Yeah, that's a very great message. And I think it's one that I need to hear, as well as probably everyone around us and our audience. Once again, just thank you so much for being here. It was really nice because just like, I don't know, a year and then just kind of revisiting everything, like even me looking through the book and like seeing the parts that I marked from like when I read it a year ago and trying to make a new story for me now and trying to see what's important to me now. It's been a really cool journey, just kind of re-exploring everything and realizing that there isn't really answers. And the way we search and the way we construct is, and the way we choose to create in and of itself as a way of defiance is maybe the answer or the process we're looking for all along. And also thank you, all the asterisks. Thank you, everyone who's listening right now. We're super grateful, and this podcast would not be made possible without you guys. Lastly, issue 10 is open for submissions. Lacuna, a gap, something untranslatable, like we mentioned so many times in this podcast. We're really looking forward to reading your submissions. And if you have any questions, feel free to visit astrolit.org with all the relevant links. And you can DM us on Instagram or email us at any time. Once again, thank you so much for being here. It's always a pleasure talking, and it's always a pleasure sharing the constellations with all of you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.